What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him more than all other days in the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is a constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham, your boasted liberty an unholy license, your national greatness swelling vanity. Your sounds of rejoicing are empty and heartless, your denunciation of tyrants brass-fronted impudence, your shouts of liberty and equality hollow mockery. Your prayers and hymns, your sermons and thanksgivings, with all your religious parade and solemnity, are to him mere bombast, fraud, deception, impiety, and hypocrisy, a thin veil to cover up crimes which would disgrace a nation of savages. There is not a nation on earth guilty of practices more shocking and bloody than are the people of these United States at this very hour.
That's pretty damning. So why did you choose that passage? What do you think that illuminates?
Well, for me, and I think a big piece of what this event is about, it's both getting in touch with the historical context of what Douglass was talking about and also looking at the meaning of Douglass's words for today. And it seems we as a nation are not willing to look at all of our history. And so I've had experiences where I've been talking to someone about the history and about slavery, and they say, stop dwelling in the past. And it's those same people that will be out tomorrow celebrating the 4th of July, very happy to celebrate the past. But we seem to be willing to take those things that we consider positive and good about our past and hold them up and celebrate them, but we don't or aren't willing to really look at the whole reality of our history, because the flip side of those things is a history of genocide and enslavement. And you know, that history allows this nation to be what it is.
Paul, take us back to 1852 then, and to Frederick Douglass, who was asked to speak in Rochester on July 5th, and this is the speech that he gave.
Well, he was, you know, the little of this history that we do get taught, I think most people know who Frederick Douglass was. He was an escaped slave who self-educated and then eventually connected with the abolition movement, particularly with William Lloyd Garrison. So it's 1852. We're at a time, you know, as the nation was expanding westward, the issue of slavery became very central. And there's a series of compromises that happen from 1789 up until the time of the Civil War. And what had just happened prior to that was there was the Compromise of 1850, and then there was the Kansas-Nebraska Act. And one of the things that happened in the Kansas-Nebraska Act is it really strengthened the fugitive slave law. And the fugitive slave law is really written into our Constitution, although not explicitly, which is Douglass comments on.
Yeah.
And so it was a time where slave catchers could, I don't like using the term slave, I tend to use the term enslaved because it's a much more active term. It talks about something being done to people rather than just the passive term slave. But slave catchers could come up and just grab anybody. And I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people may have seen 12 Years of Slaves, which speaks to that very strongly. And this really caused and really rallied people in the North against the system of slavery. And it doesn't necessarily mean, and it's interesting because Douglass was connected to the abolitionist movement, and we have the sense that, you know, all abolitionists weren't necessarily anti-racist. A large portion of the abolitionist movement wanted to just felt the best thing for blacks would be to move them to Africa, back to Africa. And many were still very bigoted. And, you know, one wing of the abolition movement was much more what we might think of as explicitly anti-racist today. And so Douglass, in his speech, he was invited by the Ladies Anti-Slavery Society in Rochester. And he spoke in Corinthian Hall to probably 500 or 600 people. And actually, that was a pretty friendly audience, and for the most part, his speech was well received. And it was also, I think, printed in 40 different newspapers, and a pamphlet of it was produced and sold as well.
And it was well received. I mean, he starts out by extolling the virtues of the United States, and then says, you know, these don't apply to us, to me, to people who are enslaved. And it's a sham to have somebody like me want to celebrate Independence Day, because independence from what? And it is, that passage that you read is pretty damning. So it was received well?
It's very damning. Well, at least the accounts at the event, he received an ovation. You know, it was a relatively friendly audience in the sense that it was the, you know, the Ladies Abolitionist Society meeting, 4th of July meeting. By the way, the event was held on the 5th that year because the 4th fell on a Sunday, and they wouldn't celebrate that on the Sunday. So in that sense, I can't imagine everybody walked out of there, you know, thinking, wow, this was amazing. But at least the historical evidence indicates that at the event, it was well received. Douglas is quite well known. He lived in Rochester. He was publishing his paper, The North Star, at that time. Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because Douglas basically says that the Constitution doesn't sanction slavery. And he has hopes for both the Constitution. It was very clear the abolition movement and a lot of enslaved African Americans and all the movements that were happening, you know, they latched on to the words of the Declaration of Independence, and Douglas certainly does this, you know, that how could you have talked about being enslaved by England while you're enslaving people here in this country. And Douglas seemed to say that he found hope in the Constitution, whereas William Lloyd Garrison felt that, I don't remember the exact quote, I think he said that it was a pact with the devil and should be burned, because he felt that the Constitution sanctioned slavery. And certainly there's at least three places in the Constitution where that's the case.
Paul, you have helped organize readings of this speech in Massachusetts, including one on Boston Common that happens each year now on the 4th of July. And you've now helped to organize the ones that are being conducted around Vermont this year. Why do you think it's valuable to read this speech out loud and think about it on the 4th of July?
Mm-hmm. I think, as I said at the beginning, we're not in touch with that history. My dear friend and mentor, Horace Selden, who's the founder of Community Change, the organization that I was executive director of until the end of last year, always talked about the idea that our nation was founded on a terrible contradiction. And on the one hand, all quote-unquote men are created equal, and on the other hand, that's clearly not true. And he said that the resolution of that contradiction is a struggle for the soul of the nation. And we're still locked in trying to resolve that contradiction, and for part of that we have to be in touch with our history, and we have to understand the impact and the connection of the history to the present day. You know, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Civil Rights Act, and this year is also the 60th anniversary of Brown versus Board, and there's a lot of anniversaries around, you know, the civil rights movement that are coming up. But when we look across the nation and we look at the outcomes from all systems, if we think education, housing, healthcare, jobs, wealth creation, the gaps in those areas, the racial disparities in those areas, have since the civil rights movement have either stayed the same or have gotten worse. And so this is still a major issue facing the country. And I think that coming together, these events, people actually, we have copies of the speech that have numbered sections. They're abridged copies because I think the original speech was probably an hour and a half or so. And people come up to the mic or sit in a circle, and each person gets to read a section of the speech. And we all get to hear it together and in some cases get to talk about it afterwards. And it's an opportunity to be able to reflect on Douglas's words and hold, as we celebrate the 4th of July tomorrow, I hope that the people who are participating in these events and who read this speech will also have Douglas's words in their hearts and minds.
What have they told you so far from the ones that you've done about what it feels like?
We did an event in St. Johnsbury on the 1st. There was an event on the 1st in St. Johnsbury, and there was one in Brattleboro. And one woman talked about the fact that she had never heard this speech and how come this isn't being taught in every classroom. A number of people reflected in the past that from their perspective, the speech totally speaks to the reality of the presence of today. And, you know, it also, you know, I would say the process of reading the speech together and coming together really provides an opportunity to have the discussions that are so rare around these issues.